Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn how an MIT and the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Disease says that choline, that's C-H-O-L-I-N-E, it's a part of the B-complex, can help delay dementia in particular patients. That's important. Anything, especially something natural, non-toxic, that can keep your memory in place? Good. We'll talk about that. And also, two types of acupuncture prove superior with people who are cancer survivors dealing with pain instead of the pain meds. This is published in the Journal of American Medical Association's Oncology. We also have a study from the University of Chicago Medical Center on how high vitamin D levels can protect against COVID, especially for black people. In a study of individuals tested for COVID, vitamin D levels above those traditionally considered sufficient were associated with lowering your risk of COVID-19. That's good news. More on that as we continue. In a study, 94% of older adults prescribed drugs that raise the risk of falling. That's a lot of people. In fact, in this one study, they found that 7.8 billion, that's with a B, billion, fall risk increasing drugs were prescribed to older adults in the U.S., and deaths from falls doubled. University of Buffalo. We have a lot and more on health and nutrition to talk about. But then we also have some audio clips that I think will be revealing. We're going to start with one from the World Health Organization looking at an insider. And when you hear her credentials, and she gives her credentials, she's a heavyweight. She's worked for the World Health Organization, and she's blowing the whistle on Bill Gates and Gavi. And all this week we're going to be exploring who's behind the scenes pulling all the strings. And we're going to have details fully documented. And it begins today. Also, we've been in communication with the lawyers for the world group of class action lawsuits that are going against people who are giving out misinformation and therapies for including the vaccine makers. And so that's going to be explored also this week. So we have a lot to share. And also, there's an attack against ivermectin. Ivermectin is the non-toxic drug that is extremely beneficial. Upwards of 90% of the people using it will not end up going to hospital. And those in a hospital, a high percentage will not go further needing any other form of major therapy that could cause them their life. So it's a great way of saving lives. And yet they're going against it. So we're going to hear from a medical doctor, an expert on ivermectin, being interviewed, about 4 or 5 minutes. It's called The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, and the Insane. And then wrapping up today, we're going to talk about millennials in the workplace. I've wanted to do this on several occasions. Time is not permitted. And then you'll have a chance to call in and give your point of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. And when we're talking about numbers, we have so many people listening now. We've had 60,000 just in the last 2 weeks downloading the program. So, and we're finding more and more new people. So here's a number that you can listen to live Monday through Friday, noon to 1, and Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. Write it down. You never know when you're out and about, not near a computer, and you want to hear the show. 717-734-6955. 717-734-6955. And for the archive number, you can make one phone call and download five programs. 631-359-9463, 631-395, 631-359-9463. 9463. So we have a lot to share with you. Let's begin. I believe that choline and inositol, I-N-O-S, inositol, and choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, should be taken together. Between 500 milligrams, 700 milligrams is more than enough. But this MIT study showed that researchers found that the APOE4 gene can increase the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease and other dementias by altering brain cells' lipid metabolism. In comes choline, an inexpensive, very, very powerful nutrient, and it reverses these defects in cell studies. Further supports research in people carrying the APOE4 gene. Just to give you a little understanding, this certain genes can increase the risk of developing dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, which is a form of dementia. One of the most significant genetic risk factors is a form of the protein EG called APOE4. And about 25% of people carry one copy of the APOE4, and 2 to 3% carry two copies. Well, APOE4 is the strongest risk factor gene for Alzheimer's disease, although inheriting APOE4 does not mean a person will definitely develop disease. APOE gene comes in several different forms, what are known as alleles, and it's the most common and not believed to affect Alzheimer's risk. APOE2 is relatively rare and may provide some protection against Alzheimer's. The reason APOE4, that's the culprit, increases Alzheimer's risk isn't well understood, but the protein helps carry cholesterol and other types of fat into the bloodstream, and recent studies suggest that problems with brain cells' ability to process fats or lipids can play a role in Alzheimer's-related diseases. Lipid imbalances can impair many of the cell's essential processes. This includes creating cell membranes, moving molecules within the cell, and generating energy. So that's why they found that choline worked. So that's good news. One more piece of the puzzle. Now, two types of acupuncture significantly reduce chronic musculoskeletal pain in cancer survivors as compared to usual care. This is a randomized trial. Electroacupuncture reduced patient-reported pain by 1.9 points versus usual care, and other acupuncture, the orocolar, reduced the patient's mean pain by 1.6 as compared to usual care. So I think it's very important. So just understand that you can use electroacupuncture that can help you with musculoskeletal pain. Now, you don't have to have cancer and be a survivor in order to benefit from this. Years ago, long before any of this research was being done, a gentleman named Dr. Fox came into my office at the Tri-State Healing Center, and he said he had some interesting research. He had this, it looked like a suitcase. It was a stainless steel case. Opened it up, and inside was all this electrical gear. He said, this is all something new. And he said, would I be willing to at least see if it works? So I took it over at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a senior research fellow, and I did a lot of experiments. And just one experiment, for example, was on electroacupuncture. And it started with him. And we would ask for volunteers who had chronic pain, were on meds, but it still didn't get rid of the pain. And he would hook it up non-invasively, just little stickums that would to the tab, and wherever the pain was. And then he would program in all the information that he needed for you to be able to be benefited. Then he would hit this, and it would pulse, and you would see the pulse lines going. And for different types of pain, like migraines, it was a faster pulse. For other pains, like fibromyalgia, it was a slower pulse. And then there would be radiation of the pulse. It would go way up, way down. It had all these different configurations. This was all his. And sure enough, I would have person after person after person tell me enormous benefit, 2, 3, 4, 5 sessions, and the pain was gone. And I said, how did you come across this? He said, well, he said, there was a series of horses. I said, I think he believed 3 horses were involved in making the film The Black Stallion. And one of those horses was on the sand, and it was a scene where the horse was supposedly killing a snake, jumping up, and it fractured its legs and was going to be put down. And a French doctor said, don't put it down. Let's see, use some magnetic therapy. So they pinned all the fractures together, the breaks, and then he used these magnets on it. And he had very powerful magnets. And lo and behold, the horse did not have to be put down. The bones healed. And the horse capital, the thoroughbred horse capital of America, is Denton, Texas. And I had the Healing Springs Ranch just 20 minutes from there. You have thousands of horse farms there. In fact, it's kind of interesting because some of the horse barns look nicer than the people's homes. I mean, they have organic oats and organic carrots and organic apples, and they really take care of their horses in special filtered water where they themselves, they don't follow any of this. Anyhow, so he said that he was down there, and that's where he got the idea, if a stationary magnet would work, what if you allowed electrical stimulation through the magnet? So you're taking the electrical stimulation and you're pulsing it out at different frequencies. Anyhow, that's where he went to work. And over 3 years, he was able to help all the horses that ended up with fractures. None had to be put down. And he said one of the horses came in that had 16 fractures. Normally one fracture, they'll put a horse down. He said it didn't have to be put down. So that was the evolution of this electromagnetic healing. And now it's everywhere. It's electroacupuncture is just absolutely normal. And I never knew what happened to that fellow. Yeah? But that's how it all evolved. Anyhow, it reduces pain severity substantially. So you might want to check to see who does electroacupuncture in your area. There's a large body of evidence on it now. I mean, it's not something that is approved. In fact, for acupuncture for chronic lower back pain. In fact, a recent meta-analysis showed that acupuncture reduced cancer-associated pain. So just one more thing that we can use, okay? Now, for those of you who are not getting enough vitamin D, and that's people who have different pigmentation in their skin, the darker your skin, the less vitamin D is produced, the altitude at which you are living, and how far are you from the equator. For example, right now, I'm at the animal sanctuary tending to the animals, and it's a nice day, but tomorrow it's going to be 90 degrees, and I'll be outside. I'll be outside with just my running shorts on for about an hour. I'll get all the sun I need, and I'll take my antioxidants before and after so that there'll be no damage. I never allow sunburn because that's where you get your skin cancer. And when you have chronic sunburn and then tanning, sunning and tanning, that is a prescription for cancer later in life. But if you just get, let's say, a half hour to 45 minutes over about three quarters of your body, you've produced about 20,000 units of vitamin D or more. In any case, a lot of people put so much sunscreen on, they don't get any vitamin D. They blocked it. And I'm not a big believer in using sunscreen. I don't like the idea of going out on a beach, lathering up, and laying there just to let your body get burnt. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Anyhow, new research at the University of Chicago Medical Center has found that when COVID-19 is in the air, in your body, you have far less risk of infection if you have high levels of vitamin D. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Open Network. So retrospectively, examining the relationship between vitamin D levels and the likelihood of testing positive for COVID, and the more vitamin D, the less likely you're going to be testing positive. Just something to share with you. If there's one nutrient above all else that you should have in your body, I'm going to suggest right now 10,000 units a day and up. All right? And if you are an African American or an African, if you're a person from any place in the world where you have a dark skin, take more vitamin D. Okay? It can help save your life. It also strengthens your immune system. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of articles on PubMed on what vitamin D does. And also, I've been talking for decades about overprescribing medications for children and seniors. And especially during the AIDS crisis, there was one person who came into the office, and this gentleman had a bag, a shopping bag, and he poured it out on the table, and there were 26 different medicines, all of them with severe toxic effects. In fact, I got the physician's desk reference, and we went through each one to show the side effects. The number one he was taking was AZT, but he was taking all these other drugs. And he was just skin and bones. He was cachexic. He had 22 opportunistic infections. He had Kaposi sarcoma, and he had pneumocystis pneumonia, and thrush, etc. In fact, he had thrush so bad that when he would open his mouth to speak, it looked like someone had stuffed cotton balls into his mouth. So one of the physicians there who was working in the lab where we had set up the lab, the institute had set up of applied biology, had set up a special department just for AIDS, and they were using just my protocol, and a person to qualify had to have full-blown AIDS, meaning they were not just HIV infected, but healthy, but full-blown AIDS, have a whole series of blood chemistry. And by the way, all the treatments were free, and even the blood tests. And then the doctor would come in, and with this gentleman, he filled up, there was a little sputum cup, and it was filled. So he went out and he got a coffee cup, and he came in, and he filled up half of that coffee cup with what he could scrape out of that man's cheeks and tongue and jaws. And the danger was it was in his lungs. So I developed a special protocol, put him on it, and 16 months later, he was HIV-free, AIDS-free, completely healthy. And but that first day, we lined up all the drugs, went through every side effect, and the drugs alone were killing him. In fact, the number one side effect from AZT was AIDS. So think of all the mistakes that were made where people were HIV positive but otherwise healthy, took the drug at 1,600 milligrams a day, and over months developed AIDS symptoms, and then they gave him more drugs saying that the AIDS was getting worse, and the drugs they were giving him were making him worse, not HIV. And so he was drugged to death. And I would say, conservatively, that was several hundred thousand Americans. That's a crime against humanity. They've never been held accountable for it, especially the people who are promoting, put time on your side, take AZT. They were well-intentioned, and they were passionate, but that's the unthought-of side effects, where you literally drug a person to death. And that's exactly what this study was showing. So many drugs. And with these drugs, they cause a loss of balance. An older person takes them and falls, fractures the hip, has no immune system, develops an infection, and dies. You don't think that's common? That's very common. So we have to take an honest look at all this, okay? And just do not assume that because your doctor is giving you a drug to counter the effects of another drug, and then another doctor, another drug for another drug's counter effects, and suddenly half the drugs you're taking are to try to undo some of the negative effects of the other drugs you've taken, but they themselves have negative effects. We are just too overdrugged, and that's because it's too profitable not to drug people. Now, there are certain drugs that work. They're drugs that help save lives. They're surgical procedures that help save lives. Medicine that works, I'm 100% for, especially emergency medicine. But medicine that kills, I oppose. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go directly to this whistleblower. You've not heard this person. You haven't seen this interview before. This is one of those that you think, wow, why doesn't the New York Times do a webinar with her and challenge her? You know, throw the hard questions at her. Absolutely. We do. Nobody gets away with easy interviews on this program or ever has. And by the way, I was just curious yesterday. Someone had asked me, and I didn't have an answer. I know how many years I've been on the radio, 54, almost 55, and I didn't know how many shows I've done, not how many guests. So I started adding them up. I added up PFW and BAI and KPFK, ABC Network Radio, WMCA twice, 3 years and 2 years, WOR, Balkan Echo Studios, Progressive Radio Network. Here's what I came up with. As close as I can see, 41,652 hours of broadcasting. I repeat, 41,652 hours of broadcasting. I do not know how that compares to anybody else. That's an awful lot of broadcasting and just getting started. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We're going to go to this in a moment, but I just want to set it up a little differently. She gives her bio and talks with a panel. She's talking with a panel of lawyers, international lawyers, who are holding these hearings because they intend to bring lawsuits or are bringing lawsuits against those who they believe have committed crimes against humanity and trying to stop this insanity of what's going on with COVID rules and regulations. But it's about 6 minutes into this where she starts to reveal, and listen carefully to what she's saying, how Bill Gates got Gavi to be treated as if it were a nation state, and Bill Gates himself. Wait till you hear what she has to say. Mind you, she's an insider. She's from the World Health Organization. She worked with them in all these major scientific groups, was the head of a major scientific group in Switzerland. She's a heavyweight. She's the first whistleblower to say something like this. Now, I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel that our entire way of dealing with the immigrants coming into the United States is wrong. I believe that we should be a country that opens its heart and its doors to those who are going to be coming in and hopefully starting a new life that is better than the country and circumstances that they left. You have to look at this from a more spiritual and humanistic point of view, but you also have to be practical. We shouldn't have prisons inside the United States for children. Just as the Trump administration had inherited the cages from Barack Obama, and he was condemned for how he handled the immigrants, now it's Biden doing the same identical thing. And they're sleeping on the floor, huddled on the floor, 8 pods each, which are supposed to hold 260 people, are now holding massive amounts of people, over 400. So nothing has changed. But here's what I'm challenging. There should be a legitimate fast-tracking of people coming in to make sure that they are themselves legitimate. 85% of the DNA tested showed that the children coming in are not biological. And what we now know is organized crime all over Central and South America, mainly Central America, are bringing in young girls 10, 12, 14 years of age, so they can be prostituted. That's a crime against humanity. And this has been going on for a long time. And now they're not being isolated if they have opportunistic infections that can be spread. And they're not getting the medical treatment they need. They'll get on a bus and boom, they're gone. Now, if you're going to be arresting people on a beach, a lone single person, if you're going to throw a woman down and roughhandle her as the only person in a stadium watching her son in a sport, and they actually have done this, What's it mean when you're allowing 100,000 people to go anywhere they want and not seeing are they sick and giving them the treatment they need for the illness they have, not just COVID, but for any? That's number one. So what should we do? A simple solution is, and not that expensive, is you open up like 100 different points of entry where you have a legal place to come in. They will be properly informed of their rights, and then you give them the resources right there and then. You give them clinics to help them with their condition, malnutrition, whatever it is. You give them a place to stay, individuals and families, and you have relocation officers that can help them get to where they need to go, where there's employment, instead of working somewhere in a, you know, out in a meat cutting factory, you know, for $8 an hour or in a fields for $3 an hour. We don't want that. That does not help Americans, doesn't help them. It's all about humanity, respecting humanity. Do it right. Otherwise, you know what's going to happen? You're going to have rapists, you're going to have child smugglers, and you have the potential, very real potential, from all over the world of having ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda bring in people, since there's open borders and they come here for one reason only. What they started on 9/11, they want to give us another one of those surprises. And we do not have the resources at this moment to allow 100,000 people a month to come across and be so naive to think that these are all going to be the right people for our country. The majority will be. But what about those who are the terrorists, who come to do harm? And this time they're going to do harm on larger scales, whether it's polluting a water supply for a whole city or community. It's going to happen. Anyone with a brain realizes it, unless we have a proper, professional, and humanistic way of incorporating people into our society so they're not a burden to our society, or they are not going to continue being mistreated in this country. And they're doing all this for politics anyhow. Separately, I'd like to thank all of you who showed up on Saturday from this audience for a day of protest against our freedoms of our body, our freedoms of choice, our freedoms of speech. And thank you for listening quietly and to my talk. And now those of you who couldn't be there, you can go to prn.fm, scroll down, and you'll see a video. Watch the video. It's 35 minutes long. And that was the speech that I gave, the audio portion of least, which was heard on Saturday. And by the way, the next time I do that, it'll be in person. I'll be coming back for premiering the film when theaters fully open out on Long Island, Huntington Art Cinema in the city, and up at Woodstock. And that'll be probably just after the retreat. So thank you all. I don't know the exact figures, but it got larger and larger and larger as the day went on. And someone took a picture. We're going to post all these photographs, by the way, you see for yourselves. The best guess we could come up with is over 2,000 people from this audience, mainly. So thank you for doing that. And all over the world, there were demonstrations. One demonstration in London alone, you'll see that there's like a mile of people. And by the way, it goes longer than a mile. It's just that it turned the corner, so we don't know how many more people behind that, but hundreds of thousands of people demonstrated there. Not a word in the American media. I checked the BBC, New York Times, Washington Post. No one covered this worldwide protest against the lockdowns and the lack of science supporting the protocols on COVID. So millions of people are speaking up, and the media doesn't want you to know that. Okay? So, and by the way, good for Naomi Wolf. I appreciate your courage, not just in all the things that you've been right about and spoken about, but you've had the support of the liberal and corporate left community for decades. Now you're being attacked by those very same people for speaking your truth. I commend you for speaking your truth now, knowing that not only do you not have the support of most of those organizations and people, they're going to try to make you an example. Standing up in the face of that kind of tyranny shows a unique disposition of courage. Now let's go to the video.
Dr. Stückelberger, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Can you tell us what you do? What is your background?
Yes, I've been my whole life a scientist, actually, so health scientist. I started in biology, then I have a complicated CV, as many women who survive in the academic world, but mainly I've been doing research and training, teaching my whole life. But more so, more and more, since very early on, I was in WHO doing my master's degree on mental health differential in diagnosis, cross-cultural diagnosis, which I even posted on my website. And then I was taken in a geriatric unit with WHO collaborative studies and the Hospital of Geneva, Switzerland, to do research. And research was always and more for political decisions. So since the 90s, I've been deputy director of the Swiss National Program on Aging, 12 million francs, and we had to do science for politics, for politicians, decision-making and for the people. And then I was also, deputy director at the same time for the Interdisciplinary Center of Gerontology Geriatrics. So my first part of life was a lot on aging, the life course, health, differential men, women, a lot of multidisciplinary factors. And I was paid by the Faculty of Medicine, although I started in psychology, then I went to medicine very quickly. So I did a PhD on population, aging, health, subjective versus objective health on a big cohort. Because of my positions, I collaborated very quickly with WHO. Mm-hmm. We created an international network on aging. This is how I understood how more and more how the United Nations works, how WHO works. Since 1994, I was expert there, taken as a rapporteur, a young rapporteur speaking all those languages. And then the politicians started to ask me to do events, and I organized twice the UN Open Days. Mm-hmm. So that was my first part of life. I got a prize from Kofi Annan for doing so much work in science for politicians, science for people. Then the second part was from 2000 on in public health. And this is where I started more and more to be in WHO in the capacity of on the research ethics committee for 4 years. I have all the credentials, so no conflict of interest, everything. And then what happened in this courses where I was teaching public health, actually my PhD, I have always been on public health. It's just not a topic that is recognized academically. You have to know that. Mm-hmm. It's starting now. So the Geneva University asked me to take a mandate with WHO because I was so involved with the United Nations. And I did that, and it was on international health regulation. And that was in 2009. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting mandate. So I was collaborating closely with WHO Lyon, the education program, and WHO Geneva, because I know everybody in the alert and response unit. What is interesting in what I'm going to say is I've experimented the will to stop training people on preparedness plan, because we did an implementation program for 3 years with Georgetown University, Pretoria, and me for the University of Geneva. It was, the whole international health regulation is to prepare countries and member states to be ready for a pandemic, to prevent a pandemic, and to act quickly and readily. Mm-hmm. So the aim then, I thought, was very noble and very good. And I said, I helped WHO Europe to also do preparedness plan for the Eastern Bloc during a workshop. I have all the documents, I have everything. And then we won the renewal of the mandate of 3 years in 2013. And suddenly they announced that there is no fund. Japan has not paid for that. When we had not trained all the regions at all, we had trained part of Africa, part of Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, Europe part, America part, but it was definitely not, and I always said we should do a publication of training, and they never did. I did one for ethics. So I saw there that there is something wrong already. Then I started teaching this in the University of Geneva on the global health and human rights summer school that I organized with colleagues, and I was in charge of the International Health Regulation Week, which I was doing. And WHO, Bruce Plotkin, a lawyer who was working on the international regulation in WHO, came to tell me that I cannot teach this. And I told him, who are you to tell me what I can teach or not? And we had a lunch in WHO that was quite muscly, because I said, it's my right to teach whatever I want, and I don't understand why you don't teach this. I was involved also with the European Union, and I have a lot of expertise in the international world. So that's where I am now. And if I come to you, I have more to say, but I want to go to the topic. So the international health regulation was adopted in 2005, but implemented and come into force in 2008. Uh-huh. And from 2008, they wanted to do implementation training for all the regions.
Yes. Ah, that makes a lot of sense. In particular, when I see it in the context of what Frau Behrendt just told us.
Because what I did not mention previously was that I also did country missions for the IHR Secretariat, and also know Bruce Plotkin.
Oh, you know him.
I worked there as well and did some guidance issues and things. So I think we have to speak to each other.
Okay, great. You know them. Yeah. Switzerland is the center, and I speak that as a Norwegian. Uh-huh. It's the center of a lot of corruption because there we have one of the most important NGO. It's Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccine Initiative, which the foundation Bill Gates has, which has, I tell you, I have the papers, total immunity, total. They can do whatever they want. The police cannot come and look into their computer. When the pandemic happened, what would they say is pandemic? I was in South Korea for a big meeting, and I realized there is something not right and not corresponding to the international health regulation when I traveled back. And I think this is very weird. The news says one thing and people don't behave the same in the airports. So I started to look, and I realized over this whole year, all the breaches compared to the international health regulation and the preparedness plan. And I'm working now for a lawyer in Quebec who's called Dominique Desjarlais. You know, I organized the Stockholm Peace Summit post-COVID where I invited you and you couldn't come. And he was there with two other lawyers, Rocco Galati and Maître Brouza for France. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think we will solve this public health problem and population economic problem without lawyers. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing now with Maître Desjarlais, I'm finding out a bit more. And I have 4 points I can talk to you about. Mm-hmm. First, but, you know, as Sylvia is there, she's great because she can confirm and just compliment. First, that this obligation is signed by 194 member states, but it is embedded in the constitution of WHO. So they don't need to adopt it. It is immediately approved, and it's an obligation. So it is legally binding.
Which
directly.
One? What, the international health regulations or what?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the international. And this is the trick, because nobody knows this. It's in the papers. But you have to go and dig. And it's what, you know, that's what I'm finding out. You have to go and dig the inconsistencies of everything they're doing to see that they are directing as a corporate agency, WHO. Because on behalf of the health security of the international health regulation, they have made a third edition, because the 2005 edition is the second edition. The first one was in 1969. Mm-hmm. But the booklet of 2005, you know, I don't know if you've seen it. The booklet, this one, you see, is 2005, but it's written second edition. And the third edition comes, I assume, just now in 2014. Would enter into force in 2016. Mm-hmm. And this has made the health security a dictatorship where a director general can decide on his own to sell vaccines, to sell the PCR instead of all the documents that say you have to have a confirmation of a clinical and of there are other tests than PCR. So I'm finding out some inconsistencies that have not been used at all in law. So the first one is this, it's an obligation. So if it's an obligation, what Tedros, I'll call him Tedros, says, this Secretary General terrorist in WHO, when he says something, all the countries have to obey under law.
All the member states of the WHO, everyone, yes, who signed the agreement with the WHO, because automatically, because as you're saying, this is part of the constitution of the WHO, this is binding law for everyone who is a member of the WHO.
Right.
Okay.
With two reservations. There are two countries, because I was teaching that, so I know. No, there were two countries in 2009, in the second edition, that made reservations. And it's very interesting. It's the USA and it is Iran. Uh-huh. They don't want to obey to WHO completely. Mm-hmm. The 2016 third edition. Mm-hmm. What happened in WHO, but maybe Sylvia, you were there when it happened. Bill Gates was already around. He was already, you know, mingling, saying that he pays so much money. But he became visible when, I think it was in 2017, or you correct me, that he, I know this through my colleagues there, he requested to be part of the executive board of WHO like a member state.
Ah.
And it's incredible. I said, how can he dare to do this? And they went to the vote. The executive board meets every January. So, and it changes every year. And the lobby, they tried to lobby the countries. Of course, he tried to bribe. But it's really an event, because it is not mentioned. Maybe we can get the minutes of the executive board. They even accepted that he would be considered as a member state because of the money he gives. So this is unprecedented in a constitution of member states.
Is he now being considered as a member state?
Not officially.
But unofficially?
Not that I know. Maybe there are documents.
Unofficially, yes. And that's probably because that's why he has this immunity, right?
He has total immunity in Switzerland.
Okay. Unofficially, he probably holds that kind of status, right?
Yeah. I can tell you why it is very suspicious, is because I think he has done something with every member state, the same contracts. What I found out with Swissmedic is the FDA of Switzerland, mm-hmm, is because I gave the paper to a journalist and now I don't even find it. I can't find it again. The Swissmedic has signed a contract with Bill Gates and WHO.
Aha.
And this is abnormal.
So basically, he literally tried to lobby himself into the WHO as a member state to basically found the country of Bill Gatestan. That's basically what he did. I mean, at that point, he would have been basically a one-man country.
Yes, he could be a dictator because he can influence the... But the fact that he was not accepted by vote, that's why the minutes would be very interesting. By vote to be a member state, mm-hmm, he then started to sign papers for countries. That's my hypothesis, because he did it with Swissmedic. So WHO, Bill Gates, and the country in charge of accrediting treatments and vaccination are signing contracts.
He didn't get in official capacity. He didn't get voted in. So then he tried to circumvent that and just basically went around the middleman.
Well, yeah, how can you, if you're a country, sign a contract between three signatures, Bill Gates, a country, and WHO? Because WHO signs with countries, but not, and even that I find pretty weird. You know, why does WHO have to sign with a country an agreement? I don't know. You see, this is a corporate agency doing that, but not WHO. I mean, correct me, Sylvia, but WHO accepts to have a private company selling a merchant signing together the three to make the surveillance and to choose the medication. I think that, you know, Swissmedic had posted it on the website. I think that every country, that's my hypothesis, they have done this everywhere. That's why everybody says the same thing in the train, the same message. Every week there's the same thing happening.
Tell us more about this immunity. How does this work?
I can find again the document. It's mm-hmm. also in German, because Switzerland is also in German. And you can have a look. It's shocking. It's the normally NGOs, because I have been an NGO and I'm an NGO activist with academics in the UN since 20 years. An NGO has a status of accreditation to the United Nations. Mm-hmm. You can come and speak, you're an observer, but you cannot intervene in many things. And you don't have immunity. If you open an office, mm-hmm. you are submitted to taxation. Mm-hmm. Gavi has no taxes to pay. This is very strange. Switzerland is hosting an NGO international who doesn't pay taxes and who has total immunity. There are clauses in there. You can just read them. I will find it for you. The police cannot come and take a computer. If there is a criminal problem in the office, the police cannot get in.
So they're criminally immune.
Yes,
immune from any criminal sanctions.
I just looked it up. They have qualified diplomatic immunity.
Aha.
Within their area of operations since.
What's the name?
I think they have qualified diplomatic immunity, and they don't pay taxes since 2009. I just looked it up. They ratified a law in Switzerland in 2009.
Genau, dafür das nochmal bestätigen, das weiß ich auch alles. Und das ist auch Untersuchungsgegenstand dieser Shared Responsibilities Untersuchung.
Sehr gut.
Von daher weiß ich das nämlich, dass die es aufgenommen hat. Das ist von 2014 die Arbeit. Also wie gesagt, ich kann das nur bestätigen.
Was looked jetzt. It up because you just said nobody knows about that. It's actually even published on Wikipedia.
Yeah, but people don't know it because nobody cares. Because obviously,
that's the thing. Nobody cares.
Yeah, it's
nobody.
In the details. We don't even think that it's possible.
Yes, exactly.
As citizens.
That's why we're not thinking about that. That's why we're not thinking about where is the basis for all this. Because we simply accept what is being told. And now we're going to start thinking, and I think many more people are going to start thinking, because this is extremely important information. Everything is out there in the open, but most people don't want to see it because they don't believe that that can be possible.
And I mean, it's not about saying that anyone's doing, you know, running around harvesting organs from African children or something like that, something horrible like that. Nobody's claiming that Bill Gates is doing that or anyone is doing that.
But he could.
Yeah, that's the problem. We as a society should ask ourselves, should we endow any single person or any conglomerate of persons with such incredible amount of power without any kind of democratic responsibility and legitimacy behind themselves? That's the question we should ask ourselves. If somebody's going to abuse that power, because the abuse is inevitable. As soon as somebody has this kind of power, they're going to abuse it. Not today, not tomorrow, but eventually they're going to abuse it simply because they can. Mm-hmm.
But why them and not us? You know, I have NGOs. Why can they do it and not another NGO? This is the question. Yeah.
And also there's a difference with like a normal diplomatic immunity, because this is usually these people come and they just whatever, you know, work on relationships, and maybe they have a speeding ticket or I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
of course,
there's some kind of political legitimacy.
Also, yeah.
But not in this case. Nobody ever voted for him.
So someone comes into another country and has like total immunity also for like all business transactions and all that. I mean, that is really, that's crazy. It's absolutely
crazy. They have less immunity than Bill Gates. Apparently, that's my friends telling me. So maybe you know more. But the diplomats don't have a total immunity.
No, they don't.
Yeah. This is a similar revelation when we were dabbling with European agencies. We found out that in the national regulations about, for example, the European Central Bank in Frankfurt, they have literal diplomatic immunity, and there is no regulation to lift it. So the head of the European Central Bank, for example, if he says, I don't want any kind of seizure of my computers, or I don't want the police in here, they can't go in.
Yeah.
So you're hearing something that's very important. Let's keep this in proper perspective. these are all moving pieces, but they're all moving behind the veil of corporate secrecy. Bill Gates and Gavi, it's his group, he funds it, and the World Health Organization, which he's the primary funder of, along with China, he's making himself, from what this person is saying and from what I'm interpreting, a country. Total sovereignty, total immunity, can't be reached for any reason. Well, what if he makes a mistake? What if? What if promoting vaccines to everyone, and now they're promoting them for children as young as six, and babies as young as six, and children, and they want to get them vaccinated because they are at risk? No, all the science shows they're not at risk. They're not at risk at all. And yet, so why would you want to vaccinate children with an experimental vaccine who are not at risk of anything? Because their body is still developing. Their DNA is still developing. Just look at Global Research's newest article from Nina Beatty called COVID-19 Vaccine Risks and Research. Quote, the current vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna's RNA vaccines, and J&J's vaccines, using a human adenovirus vector, and AstraZeneca's Oxford vaccine using a modified chimpanzee adenovirus, instruct a person's cells to produce COVID-19 spike proteins. Recent research has found that the COVID-19 spike protein by itself may be causing much of the damage in COVID-19 patients in endothelium and organs without the virus itself present. If this is the case, deliberately causing a person's body to make these spike proteins and for an unknown period of time could subject healthy people as well as the most vulnerable, including those with pre-existing conditions most at risk, according to the scientific literature, to grave public health risks, extensive damage to the endothelium and many other organs, including the brain, heart, kidneys, and liver, and more susceptible to thrombosis, blood clotting, severe illness, heart attacks, and death. Further, the Pfizer-Moderna is encapsulated in a lipid envelope to protect the RNA from destruction. It will send its message to a person's cells to produce spike proteins for an unknown period of time, perhaps permanently. Some medical experts also report that people of Hispanic and Native American and African genetic background degrade RNA more slowly, making them particularly at risk for long-lasting spike protein production and its related effects. These many people may also have lower vitamin D due to genetics, putting them at greater overall immune risk, and they often have a higher immune response, another risk factor. In their recent white paper, COVID-19 Experimental Vaccine Candidates, the organization American Frontline Doctors warns, quote, a too strong immune reaction to a vaccine can result in inflammatory disease that, like transverse myelitis, inflammation and paralysis of the spinal cord. This raises grave concern about prioritizing African Americans to receive an experimental vaccine when so much available science shows that this demographic is already at a higher risk of adverse reactions to vaccines. Patrick Whelan, MD, UCLA, alerted the FDA in December prior to Pfizer vaccine emergency use authorization that the COVID-19 spike protein might be causing tissue damage associated with COVID-19, quote, microvascular injury to the brain, heart, liver, and kidneys in a way that does not currently appear to be assessed in safety trials of these potential drugs, end quote. And then other doctors come in on this as well. So when we're saying that they have not any reliable science showing that this works, and now they're saying today in the Wall Street Journal, oh, it's only 79% effective. Well, hold on a second. You said it was 95% effective. Now it's down to 79, and with a faulty PCR test, this is junk science at its worst. And now the number of people dying is increasing, but nobody is going over to the vaccine adverse reporting system to see how many actually died, and that's a small percentage of the actual deaths. It was over 1,700 Americans, 1,700 Americans. How many are in hospital with serious adverse effects? Over 10,000. Of the hundreds of thousands who have been adversely affected. Nothing is being told that is the truth. In fact, the former director of the FDA, said, oh, it's good news now because it's showing that early use of the vaccine is able to prevent these people from developing COVID. Not true. My God, is this person so misinformed? And you're the head of the FDA? At no point did any of these vaccines put into the research model, does this actually prevent transmission or contact and therefore becoming positive the virus? It doesn't protect you from the virus. It doesn't protect you from hospitalization. It doesn't protect you from death. So why are you saying that it is protection? It's no protection. So how is this supposed to allow people to go back into the workplace or any place else if they're not protected because they can still be infected? All you're getting is misinformation. That's why we're doing so much on this topic. Finally, we have coming up in 1 month from yesterday our health retreat, which is a fundraiser for the station, and then also our two-week anti-aging study, brand new. We've done three. This is a brand new model because I'm integrating things that have never been integrated in any study, clinical study I can find in the entire scientific literature. And we have a lot of doctors, a lot of scientists who are at the forefront of this who are going to be there and watching. And there's so much we're going to be doing to help reverse a person's aging. Some people don't care if their age is reversed. You know, they don't care about the disease that come from being a normal American, living our lifestyle, and dying prematurely by probably 40 years. Others of us care about our biological age, irrespective of our chronological age, and that we don't have to age, and we can actually de-age many systems in the body. So for those of you who really care about age, care about health, care about staying vital, you might want to talk with Lou Anne Panessi about that part of the study. We have been full, but just yesterday evening, two people who are coming in cannot make it into the United States. Understandable. So for people who want to come and just relax and just de-stress and help themselves, that's great. So I'm going to give you Luann's phone number, and you can call her because this is going to be the final call out because we are going to be packed after this. And I don't want people, and it always happens, we're always full for everything. And then people say, oh, you know, gee whiz, I waited too long. Well, don't wait too long on this. And Luann's number is 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. It's going to be beautiful. It'll be in the high 80s, 90s. They're planting, as we speak, thousands and thousands of celeries and lettuces and mushrooms and everything you can imagine because I wanted to do workshops on showing people how they can go home and start their own home-based business or have complete food security no matter what's happening with floods and food in the marketplace. You won't be affected. You'll save a lot of money. Plus, the food you're going to be eating and fermenting foods we're going to do classes on. We have a physician coming in just who wants to do this, loves fermenting foods, and he's going to do a class, yoga, meditations, drumming, and healing, all these things we're going to be doing. So if you want to join us, call Luann, 903-881-7008. And I'm told that we have on the line right now Rita. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. We don't have a lot of time, so please okay. Tell us what your experience was.
Oh, it was fantastic. I wanted to attend something like a boot camp, and the fact that it was an anti-aging structure was over the top. And it just developed in me so many more muscles than I came with. I loved walking every day with great vigor and doing all of the physical exercises in the gym. They were very helpful. The friends, just wonderful people there that opened up my mind and it just brought me so much love, and I found the love inside of me that I felt able to share with everyone. And this, in that fantastic environment that you talk about, with the great food that I dream about all the time. Yes, I think I'm tempted to go again. What else? Oh, and so many of the philosophical readings and the lectures and the viewing of people like Bruce Lipton, hearing other advice from the masters just opened me up to really keep on pursuing that quest for finding my authentic self. I know people talk about it, and they've been talking about it for years and years and years, but it seems like it's more accessible, even at this age, when I'm almost 80. Not really.
How do you feel?
I feel very good, except that the other day I discovered a little pain in the bottom of my foot, and I think it's one of those little fragile toes, the fragile bones. So that was one of those uh-oh moments, You think everything is going fine, and then uh-oh. So I thought I might be laid up in some way, and maybe I should see a foot doctor, but I try to steer clear.
Well, so, the body's telling you something, and sometimes that's from overuse.
Yeah.
In which case the body needs rest. And just do the anti-inflammatory protocols that you were given. All right?
Yes. Oh, and I must tell you that I really love, sorry, you were talking about Nutra, that new product, nitric cell stuff.
Yes.
I love it. Fantastic.
Good.
Especially before I go do my power walking.
Thank you very much, Rita. And for people in the audience, if you were to see Rita, you would say she was maybe 50, 51 years old, 52, not near 80. So we're all going to age differently depending upon what we do to slow it down or speed it up. And so this is just an awareness that this is one of those places you don't want to be waiting for Godot. When the opportunity pulls up beside you, take it, because otherwise all you're going to have are what if, what if, what if. And talk with the people who've taken that opportunity, and they're starting a whole new life. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.